Hi everyone, and welcome to the Hero Podcast, where we feature the inspiring voices of those who are pushing for the most effective solutions to the climate crisis. Before we get started, I want to invite our listeners to check out HeroCircle.app, the first subscription platform providing a stable income for climate mobilizers working on climate policy change. Subscribe today for just 6 euros a month and get live updates on their actions and campaigns. In this episode, I'm joined by Sylvain Ferrier, co-founder of Hero, and Anna Alex, a serial entrepreneur and angel investor focusing on the big challenges in climate and nature. She founded Planetly, an outfittery, and is an active angel investor in climate tech. She serves on multiple boards and has been recognized as one of Europe's Inspiring 50, the most inspiring women in tech and young elite, top 40 under 40. Anna shares with us her journey on how she turned to the climate tech sector and why she believes in founding companies with a higher purpose. She also talks about the changes she's seen in the climate space, including how it evolved from being in the nonprofit sector to the for-profit space, and how all types of organizations and citizens are playing a role in creating a sustainable future. Join us as we explore how we can all become heroes in our own way. Hi everyone, welcome to the Hero Podcast. Very excited to have you both here. This is a very special episode, not only because we have an amazing guest, but also I have a new co-host and co-founder of Hero, Sylvain. So first of all, Sylvain, how are you and welcome to the Hero Podcast.
Thank you, Mauricio. I'm very happy to launch this series 2 of the Hero Podcast with you after the great series 1 you've done. And I'm really happy to have Anna with us for this episode.
Amazing. So Anna, welcome. I'll let you introduce yourself. So welcome to the Hero Podcast. How are you?
Hi, and thank you for having me. My name is Anna Alex. And yeah, I'm a climate tech entrepreneur.
Anna, maybe you can share a bit more about your story. Like, what's your story? What brought you close to the climate space? What did your journey look like? And where are you at the moment?
Yeah, I'm happy. Happy to tell you. So I'm an entrepreneur for over 10 years now. I landed in the Berlin startup scene quite early on. While all my peers went into consultancies, I decided to go the crazy way and found companies instead. And my first company I founded in the space of fashion, which I think from my perspective today is not so meaningful. But yeah, so I was young. And then now my second company, I turned to the climate tech sector. And I must confess, I'm completely hooked by now. So I will, and never want to found a company again which has a smaller or lower purpose than the one working for the planet, working for the animals, working for people on the planet as well. So I'm completely hooked now by purpose companies and by impact companies. And I think my story is interesting from perspective that I came really from like a lot from the business angle. So from I worked for Rocket Internet first. For Rocket, maybe some people know it, it didn't matter what the business model was. It was just about making money and about scaling super fast, using millions of venture capital in order to scale fast and so on and so forth. So this was the mindset, how I was educated to a certain extent, like educated and from a startup and shaped from a startup and mindset perspective. And then I guess me and my co-founder, when we founded Planetly, so my climate tech business, we brought this mindset to the climate tech space, which wasn't very common back then. And we brought it to the impact space, which wasn't very common back then as well. And I believe that by now the scene has changed, and we do all agree that purpose and profit can go together, and it must to a certain extent in order to really scale fast. But back then that wasn't the case, and we were a little bit like, yeah, a little bit on the forefront of this. So let's make it a business case, and let's not depend on charities. Let's not depend on rich people giving us money in order to do something good for the climate.
I'm very curious because you say that, you know, some things have changed from when you started to how you're seeing the climate space evolve. So maybe what are some of those specific changes? How have you seen that the climate space have been evolving? And especially, have you noticed any difference between the way companies, entrepreneurs approach the climate space and also how citizens engage in the climate space? From your perspective, what has changed?
Yeah, so let's talk about the companies first. So when we started Planetly, people told us you need to found a nonprofit organization in order if you want to do something good for the climate. And then we said, no, we do not believe that we need to do this. We believe that we need a for-profit business model. We need a strong business model in order to scale. And we made it our mantra to say impact is the equation of purpose and scale. And this scale, you can scale through technology, you can scale through venture capital. So we don't have any time to lose. So we need to be fast and scale fast. And this was very much the DNA of our company. So when we started Planetly, climate tech actually wasn't hot for funds. Not yet. It developed very much over the years. 2020, 2021, and by now almost every fund does claim that they invest into climate tech, and it's a hot topic. And I think now going through an economic downturn, we see that the investments into the climate tech sector are super stable, much more stable than investments into other sectors. And there is, of course, like, yeah, this is something, there's this high urgency in the climate, right? And but I do believe so over the last years, we got this out of this nonprofit corner and made it a business case. And this is what changed. And by this, a lot of people started thinking about this space, about the business models and so on and so forth, who haven't thought about it before. A lot of people with a more business mindset entered that space. May it be good or bad, we will see in the end, but I think this is what happened. So it got out of the nonprofit into the for-profit area. Having said that, I do believe it's a whole puzzle in the end of organizations of all types. There are nonprofit organizations doing amazing work, which is so important. Then there are startups who are pushing the bigger corporates towards a climate offering, carbon accounting, implementing tools to help companies become more sustainable. Then there are the corporates by now who've realized that they need to act as well. And then, of course, there are the citizens. And so it's a mix, and everyone is playing their role in this whole play.
Another question around that. Basically, I think, you've had the experience of, you know, innovating in the space and also proving that there can be a successful business at the intersection of for-profit and impact and purpose. But, you know, there's still some questions around when you bring the topic of a for-profit company or a startup mixed with purpose, especially in the climate space, there's still some like resistance, right? Are the intentions still pure, for example? Is this really because they want to change, climate change and accelerate the solutions, or is there another motivation behind it? So I'm very curious from your experience, you know, kind of breaking this type of myths of how have you seen the evolution of how people perceive these models, and how have you tackled a bit of that perception in your own startup?
Yeah, it's a very, very interesting point. And so I've always seen this quite pragmatic, to be honest. And coming back to our mantra at Planetly, that impact is the equation of purpose and scale. I always said, I do not really care why the people are doing good. I do more care that they are doing the right thing. So I don't care if an investor is investing into a climate tech company because they want to make big money, or if they are doing it because they want to save the world. And so I don't want to be dependent that tomorrow morning all CEOs of this world wake up and suddenly say, now I want to save the world. I don't want to make any financial profits anymore. This is just not what will happen. So I would rather make it a business case and know that my own face and the one of my children and my grandchildren and so on is dependent on, let's work on it together to make it a business case, to give them the right incentives. Of course, politics is playing a big role in that. Give them the right companies, the right incentive to do the right things. This is how I look at this. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And it actually brings us, I mean, we've talked about the companies, we've talked about the citizens, and maybe it's the opportunity to talk about the third piece, which we wanted to talk about, which we call climate mobilizers, which are basically policy experts and campaigners that work with politicians, local, regional, national level, to make policy change. We've seen that they have an outsized impact on policy that were you're just mentioning, for example, pushing European Union to, through a petition signed by over 100,000 people, to increase their carbon reduction targets in 2030 from 40 to 55%. I mean, that's the equivalent of the consumption of the US every year. So we see that groups of mobilizers have had that really important role. And my question is, what is your perspective? How do you see that piece of the equation moving forward?
Yeah. So I do believe that this is a super important piece of the equation. So especially over the pressure on politics, on the politicians, but as well over the pressure of the businesses. I do see the biggest lever for the climate crisis in the politics and in the businesses. I do see that, like, the end consumers, of course, they are important in order to shape, like, the public perception. But the big, big, big lever is with these businesses and with the politics, setting the right guardrails actually to for the businesses to move into the right direction. And as the mobilizers do have a big, big stand there and are as well shaping how people are thinking about their politicians and what they are doing, I believe this is an extremely important part of the equation.
Super. And just a follow-up question is, we've seen that we've done a survey and we've seen that over 80% of mobilizers that we surveyed are not paid for what they're doing, which sounds pretty incredible. I mean, what is your take? Like, I'm going to formulate it in a leading question is, like, how do you think we got to that situation today? Let's say it that way, that those that are the intermediaries between, you know, citizens and the politicians are basically not paid today. I mean, how do you think our society brought us there?
Whew, this is the big question. I don't know, to be honest. I do believe it is very impressive to see oftentimes young people acting for what they are clear about what's right and what's important to them. So I think there is a very, very high clarity for the younger people, and as well a shift in what really matters in life. So, I mean, we see that the values of the younger people are shifting towards more, working for businesses that only have a strong purpose. Making money, making a career becomes less important. Having some free time to spend with friends and family is important on the other hand side, and so on. So I do believe that, like, from generation to generation, we're seeing really an impressive shift of values and mindset. And this is part of it. So, I mean, of course, it's not a good situation. So I don't want it to stay like this. But I think this is without such a mindset shift, and maybe as well a mindset shift to the more to the good of the collective instead of the good of the individual. So while maybe 30 years ago it was like my career, how do I get into this job? How do I make most money? It shifted towards what is important for us as a generation, as a whole country, as a whole world population, as humanity, basically. And without these underlying values and the shift in the underlying values, I guess this wouldn't have been possible.
I have a follow-up question with that, because I think the perspective that you bring is very valuable to this specific question, because I think if we were to compare it to when you started in the climate space thinking about how can I make this a business case, I think here we're kind of like in the same situation, but in terms of mobilizers and individuals that today are doing one of the most important jobs of our time, but it's being a volunteering work basically, and we're seeing a shift. And we're hoping that HERO also leads that shift, is on how can we professionalize that group that wants to make this their profession. And not only that they want to make it their profession, but the world needs this to be a profession, as you said, to put that pressure on governments and decision makers. So do you see any correlation to when you started focused on making it startups a business case in the climate space, to helping and supporting mobilizers around the world to make this their profession backed by citizens around the world?
So yes, I mean, I agree. I do believe what HERO is doing here is really a very, very interesting concept, and it is an extremely big lever. I do believe that oftentimes, let it be in the C-levels of the corporates or as well in the politics, people are already like in business and in like way too long, right? And they are not hungry anymore. They're not agile anymore. They are just like sitting there doing whatever they've done for the last decade. So I do see and this is of course crazy, but I think this is our reality now, that it's we're depending on the next generation of not yet leaders, but in future leading our country, leading our businesses. And we should give them the financial freedom to do that and to focus on that.
Well, my last question to you is just, what does it mean for you to be a HERO?
So for me, a HERO is someone who is made him or herself in to a certain extent independent from what other people think of this person. A HERO is someone who's acting on what he or she believes is right. And this is not always what's popular, and this is what you need to deal with to be able to do that. So I do believe we all have a very, very strong intuition, a very strong gut feeling. And in the end, we all know what we need to do. We all know what our purpose is in life. We know what we do see as a real purpose and what is just some empty, meaningless stuff that we're busy with all day. And listening to that and then acting on this is what makes a HERO for me.
Well said. Anna, thank you so much for joining us in this episode of the HERO podcast. Really grateful for your time, your perspective. I think it's very valuable. And of course, lots of admiration for what you have also accomplished on the business side. So thank you for joining. Thank you for helping us spread the message about the important work that mobilizers are doing, and wishing you all the best.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the HERO podcast. Remember to subscribe at herocircle.app for just €6 a month to support the most effective climate campaigners and policy changers around the world. Together, we are unstoppable.